Thank you. Good morning, everybody. My talk today is about the probabilistic test of the neutral model. The talk is organized as follows. I start with a brief introduction. I present my model and the result. And then I conclude and make some suggestions. Ecologists have long been interested in identifying the mechanisms underlying natural biodiversity, and the list of presumed mechanisms is still growing. But the existing theories can be subdivided in two main categories: neutral models and non-neutral models. And the debate between the two sides is still very much alive. We are considering communities here as groups of trophically similar species that are actually or potentially competing for the same or similar resources in a geographical area. And neutral models are mainly characterized by the assumption of ecological equivalence, which means that all individuals irrespective of species have the same demographic properties, which are the birth, the death, the immigration, and the speciation rate. As a consequence of such an assumption, the species richness and the relative species abundance will be generated solely by random drift between species. Non-neutral models consider that species may differ in their demographic properties and their competitive abilities, and also in the response, the way they respond to environmental fluctuations. The most documented version of the neutral models is the Unified Neutral Theory of Biodiversity and Biogeography by Obel. And from now, when I talk about neutral model, I will refer to Obel's model. So what makes Obel's model particular? In addition to being a neutral model, as all neutral models with the assumption of ecological equivalence, Obel's model makes an additional assumption. Now, if we look at the first, the neutral theory considers the dynamics on two different scales: the local community, which is a relatively small entity, which is governed by birth, death, immigration processes, and immigration from a much larger entity, which is called the meta-community, which includes a mechanism of speciation, which is taken on an evolutionary time scale. So the two main assumptions of Obel's theory are the ecological equivalence, which is common to all neutral models, and the zero-sum assumption, which assumes that the community size should be constant. So what are the consequences of the two assumptions? First, the relative species abundance will be solely generated by random drift because of neutrality. And then the zero-sum assumption will induce a particular species abundance distribution, which is known as the zero-sum multinomial distribution. So Obel's theory has been followed by a wave of controversy on the two assumptions. So many ecologists have been opposed to the assumption of ecological equivalence. I give some references there, and the zero-sum assumption has been tested as well and rejected. But most of the critics on the zero-sum multinomial have been based by comparing the fit of the zero-sum assumption of the zero-sum multinomial distribution with the fit of another distribution, mainly the log normal distribution. So we think that a sensible way of examining a model would be to fit the model and to check how realistic the parameter estimate would be. And we need also to see if changes in species abundance would be explained by the model with realistic community size. So we proceed by developing a discrete time neutral model of local community, which is identical to Hubble's model in all aspects, except that we relax the assumption of constant community size. So we use data from the Rotamsted insect survey network, light traps network in the UK. We have three data set, Griscroft 1, 2, and Tregaron. And the two first data set come from the Rotamsted farm, and the last one from Mid Wales. So the number of species and years, I should say that the data we have are a sum of catches over per year. So it is like yearly total of catches per trap. And the number of species and years are given there. So that's for Griscroft 1, 2, and for Tregaron. So this is our model. First, we have the process model. We assume that the actual number of individuals or species I at time t is distributed as Poisson with this mean, and which mean is determined by the local dynamic and the immigration. So we assume that there is a proportion M of immigrants from the meta-community and a proportion PI of those immigrants are species I. And this is the part that comes from the local community dynamics. So that we have this mean. And it can be seen that on average, the community size doesn't change. So we have some sort of martingale property here for the total community size. And we assume that the abundance of species high in the first year is distributed as Poisson with some parameter d high. So this j is the total community size at time t. Here. So because of the time scale separation, because the meta community dynamics is considered on an evolutionary time scale. So if we look at it on a ecological time scale, we can consider that this PIT doesn't depend on T, so it's like a constant. So writing the mean of that Poisson distribution in this way, we can define this new parameter as the product of G T I minus 1 times P, and this product, the product of G T I minus 1 and this is exactly NIT. So we can write the mean in this form. So this is the process, and then the sampling model. We assume that the observed number of individuals of species I, a time t, is Poisson, with the actual number and the sampling rate, because we don't observe all the community. We only observe a fraction of the community. And because this sampling rate can differ between species, we have carried out the same analysis, but restricted to a family of species which are known to respond in a similar way to light, so the geometric species. And the numbers are in the different data set are given here. So we fit the model with a Bayesian approach using typically non-informative priors, which are given there. And we use MCMC through open box to fit the model. Oh, we get the result here. This blue line are the observed community sizes, and these are 95% credibility set for the actual community size. So basically this says that the community size, the actual community size, are lower than the observed, which is unrealistic. And this result is closely related to this one, which gives the sampling rate higher than 1. So this this blue line is drawn at 8.1. So we would expect to have all these intervals down there. So these are the detailed result that I took it from my paper. And so I show here, this is for the full data set. So we have, this is the result that was presented there. So the total community, the observed, and the actual, the predicted, and the sampling rates are here. And we estimated the immigration rate as well, which were very low. So it's like, this scale is like times 10, so it's like 0 point, it goes from 0.00 to 0.020. So this were the result for the full data set, and we have the result for the geometric set only, which are similar. So we can conclude that the model doesn't fit the data well, as it would need parameter values that are impossible. And thus, random drift cannot explain all the variation in the data. So this stresses the importance of other mechanisms which have been left aside. So we are looking for the explanation for this excess of temporal variation. So possible reason might be the environmental stochasticity, which is not included in the model. There is no density dependence, and there is no species heterogeneity, since all species are considered to be equivalent. And yes, the effect of species interaction, because species may interact in the community. So we suggest that the model be extended by including the missing component. So it will result in some in a complex model, which can still be fitted with the hierarchical Bayesian framework, within the hierarchical Bayesian framework. And if the model is fitted, ecological hypotheses such as neutrality can be tested from the result. So, but the question is the identifiability of the parameters in such a model. So we have developed such a model and try to fit it to see if the parameters would be identifiable. So we fitted the model to a community of 10 species, and we found that the parameters were in fact identifiable. So this is the 10 species that we have used to fit our model. So we chose the 10 among the most abundant species in the Giscroft dataset, Giscroft 1. So just a list of the species with the scientific name and the common name. So how was the model built? So the model was that one, with that the process model. So it is a Riker model, including interaction coefficient and density dependence. So this is the density and independent per capita growth rate of species I at time t, and alpha ij is the per capita effect of species j on the growth of species I. Ki is the carrying capacity for species I, and S is the total number of species in the community here. And then NIT would be Poisson with that mean, and NI1 would be Poisson with some parameter BI. We need to put prior on BI to. And the sampling model is as in the previous case. So we put distribution on parameters. This is the mean growth rate for species I, and this variance will replicate the effect of environment, of environmental fluctuations. So this is the way we take environmental stochasticity into account here, and this is the effect of the impact of species J on the growth of species I. So again, fitted with non-informative priors via open box. So we got significant differences in species-specific environmental variances. So which means that species don't respond in a similar way to environmental heterogeneity. And the posterior means of the interaction coefficient. I will show the table, which is the next slide. Reveal a significant negative effect of one species on the remainder. This species 7, Opistogratis luteolata. So you can see these values are quite large. So it shows that that species has a significant impact on the growth of the other species. But there is still a question, because a species of a community of 10 species may look large, but real communities are actually very large. If we consider the Gibbs-Croft one data set, there are more than 350 species. So that fitting a model, such a model, to 350 species will result in a very large dimensionality of the parameter, and it might reduce the predictive power of the model. And we can see here that there are a lot of parameters which are zero and can be neglected. So maybe it wouldn't be worth to estimate these parameters. So this is that's how to pull the model dimensionality to a tractable level. We have here we have considered the most abundant species, and that is not a sensible way of proceeding. And that is where variable selections will come into play here. So we need to use a tool such as variable selection to reduce the dimensionality of the model. And that is the work which is in progress now. We are looking at ways of using Gibbs variable selections, stochastic search, or reversible jump Monte Carlo to extend the applicability of the model to large community data sets. Thank you.
Any questions? Comment and a question. The comment is along the lines I made about the Levy Flight talk on Monday. I'm pleased to see an element here of quantitative people coming in and debunking pretentious theoretical ecology. I've never understood how theoretical ecologists can believe in evolution and believe in neutral theory at the same time. They just don't go together. The question, with your modeling, certain conditions tends to generate large counts of moths of all species. Also, you can have a winter-flying species, which will then show presumably negative interactions with summer-flying species. I just wondered how sensitive your models might be to patterns like that.
The data here are annual totals, so it takes, it considers all the year. So winter and spring are included in the year, so it doesn't.
So if you had a particularly good summer, for example, and you had very high counts.
Yeah, that will affect the environmental supercity actually.
I didn't really understand why the proportion caught could end up being so much greater than one, because my response to that would be to put a prior on it that constrains it to be 0-1, because you can't have more animals caught than exist in the population.
Yeah.
So isn't that a simple solution to that problem?
Yeah, we started with a prior which was 0 and 1, and we got it stuck to 1,
okay.
Which means that it would like to go,
higher.
But we blocked it to that level. So we relaxed, but still the prior we have used as mean 0.5. So
there's some fundamental problem in the model. That's
yes,
it
so
that.
The variability can't be explained by the model. So
there was an analytical solution to the neutral theory, and it was published in September 2003, which I know because it was published the day before I was leaving for a conference to present my attempts at finding an analytical solution to the neutral theory. Quite annoying. But anyway, I don't think you've used that, and is that because you've relaxed the assumption of constant community size?
Yeah.
But that's for the equilibrium distribution, isn't it?
Right, okay.
Where here you've got, because of the time series, you don't need to actually assume equilibrium.
Right, okay.
When I looked at the table of the species interaction parameters, when you were doing the multi-species stuff, I was looking at the diagonal, because that's the effect of a species on itself.
Yeah.
And some of the parameter estimates were roughly zero. You could put it up if you want to, sure. See if my memory's right. There, so some of those, like the species 3,
yeah,
estimated to be zero, which I can understand, that means density independence.
Yeah.
And species 7 is estimated to be close to 1, which means complete density dependence.
Yeah.
But the ones I didn't understand was like species 2, for example, where that's minus 1, which implies that the more there is of that species, the more there are going to be the next year. So it's a kind of positive feedback. And it just seems biologically difficult to explain.
Yeah, it might be explained. I think that density dependence can be negative as well. If the two species have the same predator, so it means that when the predator will come there, if there are a lot of the other species, I think that it will have a positive effect on that species.
But this is one species and itself.
Yeah. And yes, one species and itself, it depends on the carrying capacity. If the number of species is too low compared to the carrying capacity, it might not have an impact on each other.
Thanks. Your prior on beta I seemed very informative. I mean, did I misunderstand it?
With
variance 0.001 or something.
Oh, those are precisions, not variances.
Oh, precision.
So it is the inverse.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay.
Thinking on technical thing, you truncated this normal distribution. You didn't say where you truncated it. Is that the problem with fitting the model, or was there some biological reasoning behind truncating the normal distribution?
Yeah.
Where you did it
twice, yeah, because it is a mean of a Poisson distribution. It can't be negative. Right, so we just take the positive part.
I was wondering, I mean, it's a stronger assumption, but one way of getting around the problem of having too many priors, too many parameters here, maybe to do some kind of random effects modeling. So you specify they all have the same mean or some, you know, off the diagonal they all have the same mean with some distribution. And then you're only back down to sort of two parameters rather than a separate one for every element there. And then you do shrinkage estimation or something to try and get at the parameter estimates if you were interested in them. I don't know. It is a hard problem, isn't it, that you've got, you know, 100 different parameters there.
Yeah. Yeah, but we need to examine, actually, we need to examine how different species are. So we don't need to put them in, to use the same.
Any more questions? Or can we thank Crispin again for a very interesting talk?